This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. You can get a BF by going on a dating app, but what if you need a BFF? Well, there's an app for that too, and also traditional matchmaking services to find friends. New services for our disconnected age. Shasta Nelson is the author of the book, Frentimacy, How to Deepen Friendships for Lifelong Health and Happiness. And she's in the studio with me now. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Well, talk about these apps. What do they promise?
A lot of us are feeling like we're having a hard time meeting other people who also value making new friends. And so our numbers of loneliness are going up. We're seeing a really big increase. A lot of us are feeling like we just don't know where to meet each other. And so much like the dating problems of old, where we would go online to meet, that is getting met now with a lot of technology, with a lot of people trying to step in and help kind of be that intermediary between the friends that we are craving.
So do you put in the same kinds of things? Like, I like to do X, Y, and Z.
When you actually step back and study friendship, one of the fascinating things is that we're horrible predictors of who we'll bond with. And so we think that we need to have XYZ in common with somebody, and the science is not bearing that out.
Really?
So yeah, one of the really fascinating studies was that it's no more a predictor of us bonding if we have the same religious or political beliefs, which is crazy in this era, than if we both dislike fast food. And so what we think is like this, oh, we're both moms, we're both this age, or we're both this, you know, have this kind of money and love to travel. And at the end of the day, if those commonalities help you spend more time together, it's that time together that actually helps us bond. So if the commonality helps us, you know, like our kids go to the same school, so we're going to bond more because we're seeing each other more frequently. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily because we both have kids. We all have stories of people we can bond with that are not actually our identical twins. And so it's a fascinating world to be in right now, because most of us step in thinking that we need to be matched to somebody specifically. And the truth is, if we would just show up and create a healthy friendship, we could do that with way more people than we actually think we can.
That really surprises me, because when I look at my circle of friends, mm-hmm. for example, I think we're pretty alike. Mm-hmm. We have similar views. We have similar senses of humor. We've had similar life experiences. We're in pretty much the same socioeconomic mm-hmm. group.
Well, that would show who you have consistency with and who you've interacted with. But it doesn't necessarily say that if we put you somewhere else that you couldn't bond, or that you and I as complete strangers put in a room. Like, for example, so when I study relationships, and when we look at what everybody's studying about what makes a healthy team, what makes a healthy marriage, what makes me like one person more than another, I write about in Frentimacy the three things that every healthy friendship has to have is good feelings, which is positivity, consistency, which is time together and interactions, and vulnerability, which is us getting to know each other. And so any two people who practice those three things, we enjoy each other, we keep following up and have consistency and build trust in that, and we end up getting to know each other. And it feels good, and we keep repeating those three things, you will bond with anybody.
Really?
Yep, absolutely. Anybody. Absolutely. That's not to say that you have to be best friends with every single person, but if you have enough, if you feel good when you interact and you interact frequently and you get to know each other, you're going to bond.
But what if it's with somebody who has a violently different worldview or political belief mm-hmm. than you do?
I have a very tough family relationship that has that. And I challenge, like, I see the research and I'm like, but.
I mean, how deep can that friendship go?
Yes, that shows that it is no more of a common predictor than us both finding out that we have the same first name. And yet I don't walk around the world being like, I can only bond with other Shastas. I just know it because they're the only people that would
No. You wouldn't have many friends.
I would be in a room of 1,000 dogs.
And you'd be up at Mount Shasta.
But yeah, so our brains think that we have to have these things in common. And they certainly can help. They certainly help us have more vulnerable conversations, maybe. We feel less judged. You know, it's those things that matter more, is do we feel judged when we have different political beliefs? It's the outcome of how we interact with those beliefs.
Right. So what does the prevalence of these dating apps and also real matchmakers, mm-hmm. friendship matchmakers mm-hmm. now, what does that say to you about our age?
Well, I mean, I would say I don't think everyone needs to do that, but I do think it shows we're hungry for it. And I think it shows that we're willing to do something about it, which I find is a really positive thing. It's kind of like I equate it to personal trainers at the gym. You don't need to have one. You don't even have to go to a gym to be healthy. I mean, there's a lot of ways to be healthy, but if that is a supportive mechanism to you to be healthy, then it's extra support.
But does it tell you something that we're having more difficulty actually bonding with people in the old-fashioned way?
Yes, but that's also because, like, if consistency is one of the primary requirements, like we actually have to interact in order to bond, we are really, really busy. And I think what it says to us is we aren't putting enough time in. We're working long hours. And so if you're not bonding with the people you work with, what I find is that most of us are just so busy that to actually log the hours with somebody enough to start feeling close to them is really hard.
How many hours do you need to log?
Oh, my goodness. So a study came out, University of Kansas, a year and a half ago, where we self-reported saying that it takes us about 40 to 60 hours of meeting a stranger before we'll feel like we're casual friends, and about 80 to 100 hours before we feel like we'd say, oh, yeah, we're friends, and then 200 hours before we'll say we're best friends. And so you can see if we're just meeting somebody once every 3 months for lunch, it's going to take forever mm-hmm. for us to feel close to each other. And that's why it felt so easy when we were kids, is we put that consistency yeah. and we put those 200 hours in, you know, yeah. I mean, we didn't have the luxury of getting a single room at the summer camp. Like, we had to room with people. We bumped shoulders. We ran into each other. We went to school together. And so that's what we're having a harder time recreating as adults.
But do you think you can do that to some extent online, just not seeing people face to face?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I would say Facebook helps fill in the cracks of my friendships. I feel much closer to my friends who are posting on Facebook, but that wouldn't necessarily be the foundation of a friendship. And we're not making memories there. We're not bonding. Yeah. That's helping us stay in touch with each other.
So that takes me to, how do you break up with a friend? Is there an app for that?
Well, I don't know. That would be a tough one. But we certainly need to get better at breaking up with each other, because we do it horribly. I've seen so many wounded hearts of people not knowing what went wrong in that relationship. And we don't get a chance to learn from it or grieve it in the same way that we do romantic relationships, yeah. for sure.
Right. And it seems so much easier now to ghost people.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I teach the three requirements of relationship on a triangle, and I teach positivity on the bottom, and its consistency and vulnerability go up, and every relationship starts on the bottom. And as we practice the three behaviors, some relationships move up to the top. So our closer relationships are up toward the top, where we have the highest vulnerability and the highest consistency. So I teach, when it comes to having a problem in the relationship, that the higher up the triangle I am with somebody, the more I owe it to them and to our relationship to say, we need to have that awkward conversation. We need to be vulnerable. We need to show up. We need to, like, be honest with each other. One of the things with positivity being the foundation, science is showing us that we have to have 5 positive feelings in every relationship for every negative feeling. And so if we're stressed about one thing, that's fine. And we're all going to disappoint each other. We're all going to have an annoying quality, and that's going to happen. But there's got to be enough joy and laughter and gratitude and acts of service and physical touch and the empathy and validation and affirmation, all those other good feelings
just like
to kind
a romantic
of make up for
relationship.
It is completely. But once you start having that resentment build up and not getting taken care of, the more that resentment and stress, then the more positivity has to be there to, like, balance it out. Yeah. And so we start getting to a place where in those relationships, we're like, this doesn't feel worth it, right? Like, it's too pain. It's not enough good stuff for the price I'm paying for it. And that's when we start wanting to break up, is when that ratio got off balance.
How many friends should someone have to have a healthy life?
That's a great question. So we self-report saying that most of us are happiest with anywhere between 3 to 6 close friends, confidants in our life. So I think we're all different, and I give room. Some people have capacity for more. Loneliness is a very subjective thing. Some people can have 10 really close friends and feel lonely, and some people can have 2 close friends and not feel lonely. So it's less about the number, but the biggest question that I'm always saying to people is, the research is very clear that how you answer the question, how loved and supported do I feel, tells us more about your health 20 years out than what you're eating, whether you're exercising, what your genetics are, whether we can just go down the whole list of everything that we've been told is so important to our health. And at the end of the day, that feeling of love and support is more important than all of that. And so the bigger question than how many friends do we have and do we have enough is it enough for you? And if not, then that's your body telling you that you have capacity for more love in your life.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, my privilege.
Jessna Nelson, she's an expert on friendship, and she's the author of the book, Frentimacy. Coming up, Carrie Fisher's friends say she was a good friend, even though she struggled her whole life with mental illness and drug addiction.
She was incredibly honest. She was incredibly prolific. And her ability to, and necessity of telling the truth as boldly as she could and as humorously as she could, was something we kind of needed.
A new biography of Carrie Fisher, next on Press Play.